I'm ready whenever you are, Mr. Earp.
All right, let's call the meeting to order then. Roll call.
Okay, Mr. Williams.
Here.
Mr. Earp.
Here.
Mr. Taggart is on vacation today. Won't be able to join us. Mr. Ramos.
Here.
Mr. Lillibridge.
Unknown participant is now joining.
Brian Lillibridge, are you on the phone? All right, I'm sure he'll buzz in a second. Then Mike Taylor.
Here.
Great. And Mayor Holland's not able to join us today, but we do have quorum.
All right, thank you. That moves us to the public comment period. Is there, we have any callers on that wish to speak during public comment?
We did not receive any comments via email.
Okay. All right. So hearing none, we'll move on to consent.
Move to approve the consent agenda as presented. Mike Taylor.
Mr. Ramos, second.
All right. It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion? All in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? So we'll only do roll call votes, Graham, if there's someone that's opposed, okay?
Works for me.
All right. E, there's no item E. Item number F, update and possible direction to staff regarding the authority's Phase 1A project, Jason Beamer.
Good afternoon, everyone. So, moving into this, we'll start with Segment B pipeline. The construction crews have currently mobilized to work in the Old Black Colony area of the project for the time being while bore pits and other appurtenances are set up to make the creek crossing. Right now, we've got about 6,900 feet of pipe in the ground. Project is generally on time, and I did include a photo at the bottom to demonstrate kind of what those pits are looking like. Moving into the pump station, we only have one real complication right now, and that relates to some of the pumps. We had to end up sending all three out because there was scarring on the drive lines. We got the contractor looking at exactly what the cause of that may have been, as well as correcting the pumps and seeing those back repaired. I've gotten initial comments back that we should have those pumps sometime this week ready to come back. Moving on through that, civil walkthrough is still going to be the upcoming big event of sorts. And we will have to adjust final completion date once we get everything locked out. So that's pretty much all I have for that. I'm happy to take any questions if there anybody has any.
I have one, Graham.
Hey, Ken, can you hold on just 1 second?
Sure.
Could I ask if you're not speaking to mute the microphones? I'm not sure who that is that's broadcasting so much static, but it's just good policy to mute your mic if you're not talking so we don't get feedback. Thank you so much. All right, go ahead, Ken.
Thanks, James. Question, Jason, about the line going down Old Black Colony Road, and that we have a sidewalk over there, and that line look like it's in line with a big part of that sidewalk. Is that going to interfere with that sidewalk we have over there along by the park?
As it sits right now, there will be, as you get closer to the delivery point, there's going to have to be trees removed that run parallel to that sidewalk, and there may be some disruption to the sidewalk. I'm not expecting that the whole thing has to be torn out and replaced or anything along that line, but certainly access is going to have to be limited there when they do get that far along.
Okay. I was asking because we have a lot of walkers and joggers through there, and we got the question about would it disrupt the path of the walkers and joggers down through there. So I don't know if we can make some accommodation for that when that happens, to make sure people can still get through somewhere.
Yes, sir. I'm sure we can find a way to make sure that the folks can still travel back and forth like they need to and still keep the operation up and running and safe for everybody around it.
Okay. And, of course, the sidewalk will be replaced, right, by ARWA?
Yes, sir. Where there's anything that has to be taken out or cross-cut or anything like that to get the pipeline in or the equipment in, then all of that will be restored to the previous level.
Okay. Thank you, Jason.
All right. Any other questions or comments for Jason? Jason, did you have any more in your presentation to go over, or is this, I didn't scroll through the rest of my slides yet. I can get down to that.
No, sir. That's the bulk of it.
Okay. And you don't need any direction. This is just an update.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Moving on to item number F2, update possible direction to staff regarding authorities phase 1B. This is Ryan Sawa.
Afternoon, everyone. So for the update today, can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Okay, very good. So just giving some general updates on ongoing progress on phase 1B. The first item on here, of course, the packet went out late last week, and this item has hopefully been resolved at this point, but it was something we were going to bring to everyone's attention. A federal court case up in Montana where a oil and gas pipeline that was being installed, the company was being sued. Essentially, the federal judge made an order vacating the Corps of Engineers Nationwide 12 permit, which is the most common permit for utility crossings under jurisdictional waters of the United States. So this was around mid-April and for a few weeks caused, relative to a lot of the ongoing design work on the program, caused some significant coordination and looking at different options for other permits that may have to be considered. Well, Monday of this week, just a couple days ago, fortunately, the judge issued an amendment to his order clarifying that the ruling of the Nationwide 12 permit no longer being in effect is only going to be applied to oil and gas pipelines. So thankfully for that amendment, that means for everything we're doing with our water pipeline crossings, shouldn't have to deal with the ramifications of that. So anyway, hopefully that is a completely resolved issue, but certainly if anything changes, we will keep you updated. COVID-19 update, not much to say beyond what has been said probably in prior updates. You know, the design consultants have done a great job, as everyone has, of moving over to working from home and working through producing plans and all of these things from home offices these last couple of months. So, you know, I'd say for the most part, the design consultants were pretty effective in, you know, probably some initial hiccups, but now going full speed again with really no significant delays to date encountered from that process. On the land acquisition side of things, there's been minimal impact. There's been some landowners where, you know, we've needed to access land for field work and surveys and those kinds of things where that's been held up due to concerns from the landowner and coming out into unlocking gates, things of that nature, but those have been pretty minimal. I think the biggest thing we continue to track that we have the most concern about right now is just the courthouses, you know, are not currently scheduling any civil litigation, things along those lines, and so our hearings, we've had some rescheduled with new tentative dates, but, you know, for the time being, nothing is set in stone. And so continuing to track that, but that's maybe the biggest concern on our front for eminent domain, for temporary injunctions and all things related, just hopefully seeing that it'll get back to business as usual soon and seeing how that might impact the schedules overall. Moving on then lastly to, for this slide, for design milestone reviews, pipeline segment A, as well as the water treatment plant and raw water infrastructure, all have their 60% design submittals coming in at the end of this month. So I'll have quite a bit of hefty review for the program and for Alliance for the few weeks going into June. And then in June, pipeline segment B, 60% design submittal comes in as well. Giving a brief update on Texas Water Development Board activity. Just a couple months ago, the water treatment plant engineering report was approved. Just here in the last couple of weeks, the booster pump station and delivery points, EFR engineering feasibility report was approved as well. So Water Development Board on the engineering side is continuing to turn around reports, you know, within their typical time frame of about 30 days. So that's been good to see. They are currently reviewing the EFR for the raw water infrastructure, so anticipate a similar turnaround for that as well. And then on the horizon, probably next month, will be pipeline segment A, as a lot of the environmental work is winding down, a lot of the environmental agency coordination work. And then some recent release of funds. Number 6 was recently approved. That was for the water treatment plant final design contract. And right behind that has just been submitted, I believe, today or yesterday for the booster pump station, the property acquisition, as well as, actually it's not mentioned on here, but the final design contract for the booster pump station as well. So just getting a lot of those contracts in for release. Touching on route analyses and rights of entry, you know, we continue to be at, particularly for the transmission pipelines, at the end of the process, with really just a handful of parcels left on segment C and E at this point, and just a few pending rights of entry. So we're nearly there for the transmission pipelines. Then the well field, just a couple more rights of entry. And of course, this is for all of the future lines, so it's not a schedule critical item for us, but field work for those well field lines that will extend off the water treatment plant property. We're nearly there on those rights of entry as well, just a few away. On easement acquisition status, segment A, nearly all of the offers are out at this point, and several have been signed and closed, with many more pending final offers and just at various points in the process. Segment B, about 50% of the way there in terms of offers distributed, and a couple have signed at this point. And then segment D, so really those three pipeline segments so far are the ones that have gone into the actual land negotiation process. Segment E, probably by this time next month, we'll be getting to that point. But for the most part, the land agents are focused on A, B, and D right now. Last thing I'll touch on is just something to put on your radar for the board meeting. Continuing the discussion of some of the hazardous material additional investigations that are having to be done by the environmental team. Of course, we've brought work orders for the program environmental consultant to the technical committee and board meetings these last few months. The next one that would come up is pipeline segment E. Want to start by mentioning the work, field work that was necessary, all the soil and groundwater testing that was necessary on segment A was completed in the field now a little over a month ago, and the consultants submitted their report. No significant determinations, no additional concerns on the part of the environmental consultant. All of the results were positive, meaning nothing exceeding thresholds that would require special disposal or other other means and measures. So that was definitely good news for segment A. So hopefully we'll continue to hear the same on these other field studies that are underway. But all this to say, just to put it on your radar, the board meeting upcoming, we will have an additional work order for pipeline segment E. The design consultant is wrapping up their proposal right now. Those are the items I have. I'll be glad to take any questions.
Ryan, this is Mr. Ramos. I have a question. You have seven locations requiring additional studies. I know you went over those. So are you saying there are seven areas out there that have hazardous waste or will require more studies? It's more in depth, and that's what the scope of work is going to happen, or you're going to put forward at the next Board of Trustees meeting? Is that what you're saying? Have you identified
Correct. Seven?
What are the seven studies? What are they exactly?
So there's it varies. There's similar to the prior studies, there will be some where there's maybe some visible debris, could be just an old garbage disposal area or things along those lines where they just want to do a soil study within the limits of the proposed easement to confirm that there's no apparent hazardous material impact. I believe in a couple of instances, there are one or two existing barn structures that will be removed based on the proposed pipeline alignment.
Basically, they're basic. It's not like a brownfield that we found out there or something, right? So it's basically just...
These are just phase two, just to confirm that there isn't anything. You know, they see there's potential. They just want to do a little bit of additional investigation to make sure there isn't anything to be concerned about.
All right, thanks.
Sure. Any other questions? Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Ryan. Sorry, Graham. I accidentally closed my window with the agenda.
Well, I was trying to get back to it, too.
Yeah, that's all right. No worries. It was like I flipped over to mine. I was like, oh, look, I closed it. Now I got to go relook it up again. Okay, item number F3, update, discussion, and possible direction to staff regarding the authority's request to Texas Water Development Board for additional SWIFT funding. Graham.
So just want to give you an overall update. As you know, we're working on the financial application. We were able to submit that last Friday just ahead of the deadline. Yesterday, we got word that that application is considered administratively complete. So now it goes through a technical review where there may be a few questions that we get. We've got to respond to those before it moves forward to the Water Development Board for their approval. I've noted in here that to date, for issuances this year, the Water Development Board has not noticed or provided us with what the subsidies will be on those low-interest loans. Historically, on the 20-year loan, they've given a 35% below market rate subsidy, and on the 30-year note, it's been a 20% interest rate reduction. I believe it's due to the volatility in the market that has caused them to delay in making that information known. We, along with GDRA and several other folks that are seeking funding this year, have submitted letters to Water Development Board urging them to make that information known as quickly as possible, and obviously that's a key component and us looking at this funding is recognizing the subsidies that we get that lowers the interest rates. And so we hope to hear something soon on that, and I will relay that as soon as we do, but we have not heard anything yet. Following up really on that same issue, at our last technical committee meeting, Mr. Taggart asked for kind of a summary of what rates may be looking at. And so went to a couple of different sources. I went to our financial advisor, Specialized Public Finance, which puts together the graph below from their municipal market review that they do periodically. It shows rates over, this is over about a 10-year period of time. And then the item above is municipal market yield from that is put together by Reuters periodically. And what the So I'll start with the one above. That shows really the period of time in March, and you can really see the peak of the COVID scare, and that it caused the municipal market rates to really spike. What I read on this was, you know, a tenth or two-tenths percent change in this yield is considered a large change. And you can see in this period of time, it peaked at a 2% change in that yield. So that was pretty significant, but obviously it started dropping back towards where normal is and seems to have stabilized back into April and into the early part of May. And then dropping down to the chart below, it shows that even though we've had volatility, you see there at the very end, you can see some high volatility in the rates, that over 98% of the time, the rates are still lower than they've been over the last 10 years. So even though we've had a little bit of a spike in rates, they're still a lot lower than they've been 98% of the time over the last 10 years. So they're still relatively low rates. Now, I asked our financial advisor, you know, projecting rates out to late September, early October, when the Water Development Board would go close, and she wasn't ready to bet on what those rates would be. You know, she's certainly concerned, Jennifer Ritter, that there may be still considerable volatility in the market, and so projecting what that would be a little bit difficult. The Water Development Board, from their perspective, has told us to rely on the rates from last year, the 2019 rates that we closed on, as a good forecast, or at least a forecast to rely on for 2020 rates. So anyway, I don't think this is a surprise to anybody. The rates are going to be volatile, particularly this year. It's something we'll continue to monitor, and particularly with the subsidies. Once we know what the Water Development Board is going to offer in the way of subsidies, we will relay that back to you. That'll be a critical component of what we move forward with in terms of the SWIFT funding. Just as a reminder, from the process, once this application goes to the Water Development Board, they've got to approve it. It'll come back to our board for approval. And then we don't lock in issuance size, amounts, terms. All of that will be done in late August, early September timeframe. So we still have several months to kind of get through that. And hopefully we'll have a better forecast of what the market's going to be to estimate what those costs will be coming in over the next 20 or 30 years. With that, I'm happy to take any questions on this issue.
Does anybody have any questions for Graham on this? All right, hearing none, Graham, I think we can safe to move on. Item number F4, update and possible direction to staff regarding the 2020 sponsor water projections. Jason Beamer.
All right, so it's that time of the year again where we revisit what everybody's demands are and kind of look at how that all plays into the overall picture for the program. So a couple of highlights there is we started that effort in March, and COVID-19, of course, gave us a little bit of a curveball on that. So we moved back some of the timelines for
unknown
getting some of the data in.
Unknown participant is now exiting.
What we've seen so far, and I'm still analyzing the data, but what we generally see is that a couple of sponsors are increasing their projected need moving forward over the 15, 10, 20-year time frame. Once things get out past that, it's kind of anybody's guess at that point. What I haven't seen is any serious changes up or down. So that's good. It generally means that we're about where we thought we would be. And then County Line has indicated that they have a desire to obtain between 300 and 400 acre feet of water as an interim. So this exercise will, of course, help to identify sponsors who may be interested in working out a water sharing element to that end. So as we move forward, I still have to finish finalizing the data tables. And then once that's done, we'll reach out to the different potential sellers and see who could potentially meet County Line's request for water. So I'm happy to take any questions on this.
Jeff, Jason, I've got a...
Is now exiting.
Jason, I've got up on the screen the projections put together in tabular, and then I'll switch to the graph form here. Can anybody see that?
Nope.
I can see the graph on the screen. Is that what you're asking?
Yeah. So this is just a summary based on what was submitted to us as to the amount of water that each sponsor anticipates to need from Alliance Water over the 50-year period. So, it's always interesting from our perspective as we're looking at planning when we need to execute additional phases. This is the type of information we need to rely on to figure that stuff out. So I thought it was important to put that together and show that to you. And we'll continue to modify, as Jason said, as we refine and work into that a little bit more. But just want to give you a rough look at what that looks like.
Hey, Graham, this is Kenneth. Numbers you had on the screen, are those numbers we supplied some time ago, or are those more recent numbers?
We received
from Buda, we got them this year.
Okay.
That's correct.
Graham, this is Mr. Ramos. I don't know if you or Jason can answer this, or maybe it's more of a discussion item as far as, you know, everything happening with COVID, people out of work. You know, a lot of these numbers are predicated on build-outs and building new structures. And my presumption is because people are out of work, there's going to be a lot of new houses. There's going to be like a drop in the economy. Do you have any sense as to, you know, should we wait a little bit longer to see if we do some of these water trades, or is it certainly up to the entity to give us information as far as the need for them to grow and stuff? And I'm just kind of curious to see if, you know, with the COVID thing, if there has been a decline, because I mean a lot of this was pre-COVID, and now that it's occurred, you know, people are out of work, there's no money. Curious.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's impossible to identify at this point in time what the effects are going to be as a result of COVID on everything that we do, in particular new housing starts and new people moving to the area, that sort of thing. And frankly, we probably won't have realistic data on what the impacts are for another 9 months to a year. But I think your previous statement in terms of what we use this data for in the short term, and that's to try and identify customers of ours that need interim water sharing, it's incumbent, I think, upon them to tell us whether they want to move forward with that or not. And in this case, County Line, now this is prior to the COVID event, it said that they felt like they would like to secure 300 to 400 acre feet per year of interim water. We'll go back to them and verify if that's still the case or not, given the current climate. But I can't forecast on everybody's behalf what that would look like. I think you're probably right. There's going to be some impacts, but I'm not sure that it impacts the whole area evenly either. So trying to forecast that is a real challenge, I think, for everybody.
All right. Thank you, Grim.
And I'll say this, Umberto, as far as the city of Kyle anyway, our new housing starts and permit requests have not really changed. So that may be one of those lagging things that, you know, we don't see it another 6 months from now, maybe, but the builders are still pushing forward and people are still closing on houses. So I'm not exactly sure, when we're going to reach the critical mass.
Okay. Yeah, James, this is Kenneth. It was same here in Buda. We're still there. They did say there might have been some slowdown on some closings, but that's because people couldn't get out, basically. but the builders here, they're still building homes, and we did some projections. And again, it's impossible to tell, but they still looked positive.
All right, thank you, guys.
All right, we ready to move on then?
I believe so.
Okay, there it is. I was about to say, dadgummit. Where'd my stupid thing go this time? All right, I found it. F5? Discussion of the proposed authority budget for fiscal year 2021.
What's that time of year? Yes, I know you're all aware. We have the budgets. We'll get the first draft of our preliminary budget for the next fiscal year. As usual, I've included our schedule. We have not officially updated our financial policies, but we are aiming, as requested by the administrative committee, to have everything finalized by the end of July, give an extra month for each of our sponsors to accommodate and incorporate this information in their budgets. So we'll continue to try and meet that schedule. Couple items on the current, where we're at in the current fiscal year, the FY 1920 budget. Our expenditures, operations, and maintenance are about 7% below projected, but we're expected to be at the end of the year. Capital expenditures are a lot less, about 22% below that budget amount. Primarily, that's due to the initial debt service payments for 2019 were a lot less than what we'd expected. As a refresher, any of those debt service payments go into reserve funds and only be used for debt service. So that money is just sitting there waiting to be used for future debt service payments. So that does not roll back into operations and maintenance if it stays in reserve funds. And then our revenues are expected to be about 1% above the budgeted amount. So far this year, we're in good shape overall. A few highlights of the initial 2021 budget. It assumes we'll have on the part-time bookkeeper and the full-time operator by the end of this fiscal year, so they'd have all of next year would be on. No significant changes in consultant expenditures, including a new line item for operations and maintenance of the Phase 1A booster pump station. It's the first time that's shown up as its own separate set of expenditures within this, because we expect to have that pump station operational next fiscal year. I reserved $75,000 for updating the regional wastewater treatment plant study. We do that every 5 years or so, and update the projections and that. And so it's that time of year, that time of the process again. So I've just reserved some funds for that. And then I've updated all the debt service payments to match the actions. Pardon me. So the rest of the more detailed budget on the projects that we're doing and some of the water sharing, we still have a little bit more detail to put together that. I also intend to call, working with Mr. Taylor, I'm calling an administrative committee meeting here in the near future to discuss some of the assumptions regarding employee expenditures and get a recommendation on that. So we'll go through that here in the next few weeks and get that done. Otherwise, what we're projecting based on our initial estimates for 2021 is slightly below what we had projected it would be with last year's budget when looking to 2021. So in general, we're still tracking, I think, in pretty good shape with that. And then behind here are just the more detailed line item budgets where you can see previous years where we landed and what I expect will be at the close of this year in the far right column that is proposed for this next fiscal year. And then this is the five-year, appendix C is the five-year projected, trying to take an estimate of what that's about 5 years for planning purposes. So not taking any action on this item today. Just wanted to get it out there. If there's any questions or if there's anything you'd like it to, we could certainly provide that to you. Initial feedback if you've got it.
This is Mr. Ramos. Graham, I have a couple of questions. First question, with your part-time bookkeeper and your full-time operator, I think I asked this before, where do you plan to house them? Because I think we're still waiting on us to see if we have any cost savings, to see if we're going to move with an admin building. So what's your thought process in housing these employees? I know through COVID, it's now like everybody works at home, but what's your thought process if we go back? Where are they going to be housed at?
Yeah, so with the operator in particular, that'd be a full-time position. That would be at the trailer that we've got, the construction trailer that we're going to have, and we have right now at the Phase 1A booster pump station site. We also intend to co-train that operator where they are also doing some of the construction inspection work. And so they'd be involved in those construction projects for the Phase 1B program as that moves forward. So it'll be a lot of time in the vehicle as well as they'd have that phase of the trailer until such time as we've got a facility to house them. We still need to discuss, and this is another call I'll make with Mr. Taylor. We discussed about sharing the bookkeeper between us and Crystal Clear, and possibly housing that at Crystal, that person at Crystal Clear's offices. And so I just need to work with Mr. Taylor and work out the details there. If that's still something they want to move forward with, and try and get that piece moving.
Okay. The other question I have is with regards to the Regional Water Wastewater Treatment Plant study. You said $75,000, and you said every 5 years you put $75,000, or you try to. You know, I want to be frank. This first time I've heard about every 5 years putting $75,000. What's your thought process on that? I mean, we did do that study. I don't know how much it cost initially. How many more times do we plan to continue to do the study? I do know one of our water management strategies is we use wastewater as an effluent drinking. Give me some more feedback as to why are we putting $75,000. I know you said it's reserved. We're not going to possibly or may not use it, but I'm just kind of caught off as to why we're doing this.
So there are two separate things. We are not doing anything with our direct potable reuse study that we'd already completed and finished out. That's the DPR study for that's a water management strategy in the 2021 regional plan that's moving forward. What this deals with is when we had completed that last round of the regional wastewater study, because the growth was happening in the region at different paces, we said we'd relook at the growth rates and the potential viability of doing a regional plan every 5 years. And so that's what I'm intending to do. I think $75,000 for a kind of a refresh of that data and an update to that report is more than enough, more than what we need. But I'm just trying to put a placeholder in there so we've got some funding available to utilize. We chose 5 years just because of the growth rates that we were experiencing in the region. And depending on actual growth patterns and where those houses are coming online, it affects whether or not a regional plant makes sense and whether we want to move forward with that or not. So whether that continues every 5 years or if that's something that moves forward into more of a quote-unquote real project or not, I think that'll be dependent on the results that we get from looking at the revised numbers and the revised projections and see if that makes sense for the different customers to move forward with that plan. Okay, thank you.
All right. So, generally speaking, that this is a pretty conservative budget and you know, I don't really see a whole lot of issues. I think, Graham, the only thing I would suggest is we continue to move forward with staffing and whatnot. If we've learned anything from the last couple of months is that people's bottoms don't have to be sitting in chairs in designated places to get work done. So you have a unique opportunity to be able to set up an organization that, you know, can capture the benefits of technology since you're creating it from the beginning. And I just want to encourage you to continue to think about that as we move forward.
Important.
All right, is there any questions or comments anybody would like to make about the budget presentation before I move on to item number F6? All right, hearing none, I will open up item number F6, which is the update on our, this is what I always say, update on all of our stuff, just because I want to read that entire heading. So item number F6 is now open.
Great. The Gonzales District met virtually last night. One of the items on discussion was the monitoring well agreement. You recall, this is something that we funded. All of us that have permits in the Gonzales District, export permits are funded for the installation of these monitoring wells. We have some leftover money. The district has put together a list of items, the additional items they could see completed that would actually not utilize all of the money, but would utilize a large share of it. And so we're working with the other permittees in that area to determine which of those items we think need or needed to help with the monitoring well program, but which ones may not be. At this point in time, I'd say it looks like there's going to be a fair chunk of money that gets returned to each of the sponsors, tens of thousands of dollars, something on that order. It is a unspent fund, but we're still working with the district and the other. Everybody's going to get into agreement as to what we're going to spend that money on. One thing that they are going to move forward with, for instance, is adding transducers in each well so that they can pull up next to the well and remotely read the water level instead of having to physically manually do that for each water, for each well that they have in that monitoring network. So trying to do sensible things and things that further the science of what we know about the outcrop area and help us make sure that we can measure the desired future compliance, the desired future conditions compliance and keep up with that. So as we get a little bit more information, I'll be back in touch. But I think we're driving towards getting that resolved in June so that that effort can get wrapped up and that contract can be closed out. Otherwise, they did have one board member that did not seek re-election. His term was set to expire this month. He actually resigned from his office, and so they're going to need to appoint a new member. Nobody else signed up to run in that election, so they will appoint somebody for 4 years to fill that that term until, I guess, 2024. So we'll have one new board member to look forward to at some point there. Moving on down to Plum Creek District, they did not meet in April, and I presume they're going to meet a little bit later this month, but I've not seen that agenda yet. GMA 13, everything's been canceled. The Regional Planning Group, they're supposed to be holding the public hearings on the draft plan in May. They originally were going to do that, obviously, in person, but due to COVID-19, those are all going to be held virtually. The next ones are the 21st and 28th. If you want details about how to go into that and see that virtually, feel free to give me a call or an email, and I'll give you the login information so you can participate in that effort. And I don't have an update on the rest of the items.
Sorry, I was just letting it percolate. You know how it goes. All right.
Just making sure I wasn't talking in the darkness.
No, you're good. I don't guess anybody has anything to say on this. So, yep. All right. Enough silence then. Graham, executive report.
Just a few items. As you know, May board meeting will be held virtually. I'm hopeful that in June we can get back together face-to-face, but we'll err on the side of caution and only do that when it makes sense. And we'll actually follow, I think, a lot of the city's lead on that, depending on how y'all move forward, before we go and meet back in person. So virtual on May 27th, our new board members will be sworn in. There'll be elections of officers and appointments to the technical committee. So I'll be thinking about that if there's any changes. Mr. Williams, since he's not going to be a board member, will need to be replaced on the technical committee. So presumably that could be Blake Neffendorf as the new BUDA director. But if there's any other changes you might want to make to the technical committee, that'd be coming up as an agenda item later this month. And then otherwise, I've just got the typical invoices paid in April and that sort of information here in the packet.
All right. Any questions or comments about the executive director report? All right. I think I'm going to save my comment for item H since it's coming up next anyway, which is future agenda item type things. So I just wanted to talk a little bit here about putting an item on the future agenda to discuss how we're going to continue to meet going forward, and if or we should consider lobbying the governor's office or whomever we need to lobby to allow us the flexibility to have hybrid meetings where we can meet in person and or virtually or both beyond the executive orders that he's issued for the temporary time. I think that this has really opened up the eyes to a lot of people about how work can handle or can be handled and what have you. And I just think it'd be good for us to talk through that. I definitely am for in-person meetings for those that can or want to or what have you. But, you know, I know a lot of folks travel quite a bit of distance to get to call for our technical meetings. And, you know, if some folks wanted to be able to you know, communicate via the virtual meeting, if you will, and that was still available to us, I'd very much like to pursue being able to have hybrid style meetings and having the technology in place to make that work. So that's what I would like to suggest, Graham. And I know we probably don't have a whole lot of time because the next meeting will be a month from now, and who knows if the orders will be continued by then, but those are my thoughts.
James, I agree with you. This is Mike Taylor.
Well, with that, why don't we add this to the board agenda as another discussion item for 2 weeks? Because they'd be the ones that direct our lobbyists if this is something we want to move towards looking at.
So, yeah, fair enough.
After that.
Yeah, if you think that that's appropriate, I think that's fair enough. And definitely I'd expected it to get up to the board. I just was thinking that we would need to discuss it first. But I think everybody's kind of understands the concept and the pros and cons. And, you know, there are times when some of us are traveling that can't make these meetings. And if we just have the ability to have folks, you know, attend the meetings virtually like this, yeah, I think it's worth a little bit of time and effort to look into if we can get some permission for that, or, you know, that the lobbyists can ask questions and kind of test the waters to see if it's going to be a hard no, or if there's a possibility or what have you, or if we need changes to law in the next session, you know. Thank you everyone for listening to me. Yeah. Is there anybody else that wanted to comment on that before? Do we need executive session, Graham?
No, sir.
Okay. Is there anybody else that wanted to comment on that before I close the meeting? All right. I think I gave you sufficient time to find your unmute button. So if you have any comments that you're not going to get to get in, just email them to Graham or pass them on to him. That brings us to the end of the agenda. So we are adjourned. Thank you, everybody.